Hello and welcome. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series I am reading and reacting to Jurassic Park, the classic novel by Michael Crichton. After taking another unplanned two-week hiatus, I am recording two episodes in 2 days to try to get back on track and get this one done by April. As I mentioned the other day, yesterday, which will be 2 days ago now when you listen to this, if you listen to it when it's released, I said that I'm going to do the Poppy War next, and then I'm going to do the second book in that series, which I still haven't looked up, so I still don't remember what the name of the book is, but Liam and Quinn just went down to the bookstore yesterday, and Quinn got Dune, which I thought was pretty interesting. I've actually never read Dune before, so maybe after he's done with that one, I will read that one as well, and we can do that one as the book after the Dragonlance book that I'm going to do in August when that one releases. That's why I'm going to do two books from the Poppy War series. I don't even know if that's what it's called, but that's the first book in the series, so that's what I'm calling it. I'm back recording upstairs. I thought the acoustics might have actually been better downstairs, but that might have just been because I have not recorded or listened to my voice from upstairs in a while, as far as the recording goes, so we'll see if the recording is actually better downstairs and if I will continue to record upstairs or start moving downstairs. Tigger is here, for those of you who watch the YouTube and know she likes to be annoying. So you might hear her purring in the background or meowing even to get attention. Yeah, huh. You are a starved kitty, huh? Nobody gives you any attention ever because of the doggy. Or that's what you think. In this episode, I'm going to cover the first few sections of Iteration 4. Again, as I've done in the past, I'm going to use SparkNotes. Thank you, SparkNotes, if you're listening. I will take an endorsement or a sponsorship if you care for. What I'm hearing is one of the best one-man book clubs maybe ever. That was my terrible Trump. Sorry about that. Anyway, we're doing Iteration 4. SparkNotes, the SparkNotes for Iteration 4 are very short, as you'll see, and I'll talk a little bit about that in my reaction and wrap-up. Without further ado, since I've talked an awful long time in this introduction, fourth iteration. Inevitably, underlying instabilities begin to appear. Ian Malcolm. The main road. As the storm begins to gather force, the electric cars stall outside of the Tyrannosaur paddock. Because of course they do. Looking around with a pair of night vision goggles, Tim spots the Tyrannosaur clutching the fence with its forearms and realizes that the electricity has been cut off. Regis runs from the car, abandoning the children. "He left us! He left us! He left us!" And Lex says that a couple of times. The Tyrannosaur attacks the car, picking it up and throwing it. Malcolm runs from the other car, but is caught by the dinosaur and tossed off into the distance. I added that myself. Grant gets out of the car, and the dinosaur spots him, but realizes that the animal cannot see him if he remains completely still. The T-Rex knocks the car over in frustration, which tosses Grant into the air. I thought that was a nice touch that he put into the book, where they didn't immediately know that the T-Rex couldn't see him, that Grant had to come to that conclusion while in the middle of nearly being possibly eaten by this giant lizard bird thing. So I thought that was a neat little touch. Okay, minor editorial over. Return. Harding, Sattler, and Gennaro are forced to take a longer route back to the resort building because a tree has fallen in their path. Nedry gets lost in the storm on his way to the dock and is killed by a venom-spitting Dilophosaur. More on that later. Bungalow. Hammond and Wu sit in Hammond's bungalow and have dinner and ginger ice cream. Hammond laments that he may never see the day the children of the world enjoy his park. When Wu suggests that recent events indicate Hammond might have to change his park, Hammond launches into a tirade that no one can stop him from making as much money as he wants from his island. There you go. Meanwhile, security cannot find Nedry. Dr. Harding and company follow a group of compies that are off to scavenge a recently killed animal. Again, thank you to SparkNotes for that summary. And now for a discussion of new characters. Actually, no new characters are introduced. We are way past that at this point in the story. However, some are given more depth through their actions. Parenthetically, Nedry and Regis, for example, and parenthetical. Others see their characters developed in simple but profound ways. Parenthetical. I'm thinking about the kids, mainly, and parenthetical. and at least one gets a well-deserved, but not necessarily desired, vindication of his worst fears and suspicions. Parenthetically, Dr. Ian Malcolm hates being right all the time. End parenthetical. So instead, a discussion of the science. With the decreased need for new character introduction, science takes center stage again. Hell, the science is why this all went tits up. Okay, let's address the elephant in the room. Before I left social media, I saw a meme. You probably saw it too. It said that Jurassic Park didn't fail because of the science. The science went gloriously well. No, Jurassic Park failed because of capitalist hubris. You all know I never pass up a chance to shit all over capitalism. Hopefully, you also know that I like to zag when you think I'll zig. So, to avoid sounding too much like a one-note wonder again, I will table that discussion for now and simply talk only about the science. Yes, overall, the science went right. They made dinosaurs, but they also made mistakes. The main one that comes to light this time around is the inclusion of amphibian DNA to plug the DNA gaps that they found. This allows for the dinosaurs to undergo sequential hermaphroditism, and therefore breeding in spite of them all being born female. Side note, it really pokes holes in the transphobic, parenthetical, not really afraid, most likely you're just an asshole, end parenthetical, argument that changing your sex is, quote, against nature, end quote. But again, I won't go there, even though part of their argument is rooted in, quote unquote, science. Sorry, a digression within a digression. Back to topic. Hey, I know what you guys come here for. You come here for the digression, and you come here for the non sequitur, and now back to the topic, actually. I have less of a defense for this one. As a competent geneticist, Wu would have to have had encountered the concept of sequential hermaphroditism in one of his undergraduate or graduate courses. Hell, knowing what I know about high school kids, surely the topic got brought up then. So that's a pretty major fuck-up on his part. Potentially mitigated or avoided, perhaps, set up a simple series of checks and balances in the process that weed out such deficiencies. This one is a massive failure by everyone involved. And another stark reminder that those who argue for quote-unquote nature as a reason to either utilize or abstain from a certain product or process are full of shit. Nature, ultimately, doesn't care if you live or die. Science, on the other hand, often has a vested interest in your survival. All of that comes with the caveat that those performing the science give two shits about you and your well-being. So you might have to put your big boy or big girl pants on and figure out for yourself what works and what doesn't. But a line from a movie I watched yesterday is sticking with me. We can't always save ourselves, but we can save each other. Okay, fine. I'll cut the hippie shit. Now for what I like least. I have to be honest. As always, why wouldn't I? It's my podcast. I'm doing it as a creative outlet. What's the motivation to lie? How's that for an awkwardly botched introduction? Hey, I know what y'all come here for. Digression and non sequitur. Severe and sometimes random anti-capitalist sentiment. All wrapped in a general social awkwardness. So what am I being honest about this time? Parenthetical. You come for that too. An ability to just get right back to it. End parenthetical. Well, I'm getting to the part of the story where I have difficulty finding things that I don't like about it. And so instead of a theme, plot, device, or writing technique, I pick a specific scene and hyper-focus on it. And that's what I've done here, dear friends. Nedry's death, parenthetical, spoiler alert, rubbed me the wrong way. Not the actual death. He completely deserved to die. While Hammond is the main villain of the story, Nedry serves as his main accomplice. Wait, what? Nedry actively works against Hammond and hijacks his park to steal the embryos. Yes, that's true. But Nedry works willingly with Hammond as an agent of chaos. Without Nedry's involvement, mainly because Hammond, quote, took him for granted, end quote, parenthetical, an excuse at best for something he'd have done anyway, end parenthetical, is essential to the whole system collapsing. Without the sabotage, with time, they could have dealt with the inefficiencies and errors. Yes, you know this, I'm an eternal optimist. Nedry shoved the whole damn thing off a cliff. All the chaos, death, and dismemberment lies squarely on his head. And for what? To quote Lone Star from Spaceballs, a shitload of money. But even that scoundrel realized the error of his ways and atoned. Nedry threw up some double birds, threw the switch, and chased his fortune. So yeah, fuck him. He deserved to die, and I hope he burns in hell. My problem is it all happened to seem too quickly. I wanted the son of a bitch to suffer more. Look, I'm not a bloodthirsty person. Mostly live and let live. But when you actively put money over lives, then fuck off. I want you to get ass cancer. And honestly, I feel sorry for the cancer. Sorry, Mom. I know you hate it when I say that. And now on to brighter things. What I liked best. Yes, call me lazy again. But genuinely, I liked everything else. When you're reading a story and you get to the part near the climax and is written well, you can't beat that. And Creighton is one of the best. He ended the previous iteration with some massive cliffhangers. While he could have made the mistake of dragging them out, he realized that it's time for the rubber to hit the road. The plot's tires squealed and we're off to the races. No choice but to hold on for dear life until the finish line. Okay, I think I sufficiently tortured that metaphor. But seriously, over these 25 or so pages, we get the T-Rex attack, Nedry's death, and the complete meltdown in the control room. Remember when I complained for a few episodes about the pacing? No danger of that here. I could be cliche and say, quote, if anything, he overcorrected and went too far in the other direction, end quote. But I won't, because it isn't true. The pacing, while much quicker, is perfect for the rising action taking place in the park. Now I will be cliche. I can't say enough good things about this section. Seriously. He more than made up for the pacing issues of the previous chapters with just this sequence of events. I know there's more to come, but I don't need it. End the book now. Bravo, Mr. Crichton. And now for my final thoughts. We get to the meat and potatoes of the story, and those meat and potatoes are hearty and comforting and tasty. And as I said, I can't wait for more, but I don't need more. It's just a perfectly written part of the book, and I'm having a lot of fun, and I can't wait to get back to it with the next episode. That episode should come in a couple of days now that I'm back on track and March is over, which, as I said, is always a weird one for me. So be on the lookout for that. In the meantime, as always, thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I just put up an article about Magic the Gathering Arena and how much fun I'm having, or not maybe, in that game over the last few years since I wrote about it. There's also not another podcast right now. I was going to say there's another podcast, but Chris and I haven't recorded. Communication has actually been touch and go with Chris the last couple of weeks. I'm not sure why. I know it's partly my fault because I don't reach out, but as I said, hopefully we can get together maybe the week after next when it's April break and do something. Maybe record an episode. We do have a YouTube. There's the daily RPG calendar. There's also a series that I'm calling Reclaiming My Thursdays, where I go for a hike every week and post a little video about it. I'm trying to get some more stuff up there as well to expand our reach a little bit. But, you know, who knows? I basically just do it for fun, and if people find it, great. If they don't, great. As mentioned, I'll be back with this series in a couple of days. I think I have Tuesday on the schedule for episode 8. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys.